This is one of the extras for this module, and I didn't put it in the, whenever you were signing up for this, you didn't know you were going to get it. And that's, you know, again, I've said, I just kind of like throwing some extras in there. And I was debating whether to put this in there and how to put it in there. And then at last minute, I said, you know what? I'm going to put it in there. I'm just going to put it in there as a bonus. This has to do with two things. This has to do with the symbiotic relationship between life and your practice time. And avoiding burnout. You might think that those two things don't really go together, but I'm here to tell you they hugely go together. And in the next modules, we're going to get into warming up and actual routines, and then get into the practice space and the systems I go through and all those things. But if you get this, if you understand the symbiotic relationship between life, your recreational activities, your sleep, what you eat, your health, your relationships with people, and your practice time or your playing. If you can put those two together, the practice ripple effect is going to transform. It's going to transform several areas of your life. And I'll tell you, you know, and you've heard me tell this story before probably, but a while back, Kelly and I had woken up and I hang out with Kelly. That's my wife. I hang out with her all the time. Like literally we are best friends. So if I have somebody asked a question the other day, they said, would you not go to a party just to hang out with your spouse? I'm like, yeah, I'd do that anyway. I'm kind of an introvert, but she's like, she's my hang, man. I like hanging out with her. So we get up and, you know, if you've been in a relationship, you have those off, and we had a married discussion. It was about something stupid. And if you're married or been in a relationship, you know, you argue over the stupidest things. You argue over like what movie you're going to put in your Netflix queue. Like it's dumb stuff. Many times it's not important stuff. This was one of those times where we both leave frustrated, right? We both leave and I'm going through my work day. I can't believe it. And I'm doing the grumbling thing. Whereas when I had left the house, I don't want to see her for a long. I'm going to, you know, you're griping, and I'm sure she was feeling just the same way. So I get to that time when it's time for me to practice. Well, then that negativity was bleeding over into my, I don't really want to practice. I'm just going to skip that, just plow through work, and I'm going to be mad when I get home. It's all going through my head. And finally, I thought, you know what? I have lessons coming up. I owe it to my students to continue improving. I preach about this stuff. I need to practice it. I'm going to start my routine. So I got in a quiet space, got in a comfortable spot, and I started my trigger routine. My song going, I went through the 30 breaths, and by that point I was like, all right, I'm feeling calm. I was getting centered. I went through some visualization, just really visual. And at that point, I was in my space. And once you notice your space, and you know what it feels like, you know what it feels like when you get there, and you're like, okay, now I'm in the zone. I sat down, and it's nagging at me a little bit, blah, 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 but I'm slowly letting it go. I went through my warm-up routine. By that time, I'm like, hey, I'm feeling pretty good. Let's go through this. I go through a practice routine, man. I have one of the best practice sessions I've had in a while. Just letting things go. 2 hours went by. I got done, went home. And when I walked in the door, I hadn't even thought about what had happened earlier in the day. I was like on a practice high, like that runner's high they get. And I walked in the door and I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad to see her. I didn't even remember the fight that had happened. I went over, gave her a hug. We laughed a little bit, poked each other. She's like, she was cutting some vegetables. She's like, careful, I got a knife. I'm like, yeah, well, I can take it. You know, made some jokes. It was over. And later I looked back and I'm like, wow, my practice session actually helped me get over an argument I had with someone earlier during the day. Because I went into that practice session angry, but I came out just fine and realizing it was all silly stuff. Come on. Now, am I saying that practicing is a way to save your marriage? No. What I'm saying is this practice ripple effect that I talk about, it's no joke. It really works. You getting this together and learning how to get in that space will allow you to get in that zone for other areas of your life. And because you're so happy with this area of your life and everything's together and you're happy with where that's going, there's this relationship between everything else. And you realize that your practice time is not the only thing that's important to improve your playing. Okay, I know I'm going to get to my three tips. I'll get to that in just a second. So, the very first tip I have, okay? The first thing you can do to make your practice time the best it can be is you need to have as much recreational activity in your day as you do practice time. If you do not, you're doing something wrong. If you do not, it will lead to burnout. Okay, they did. I'll point back to the study, and I'll actually read you something here in a second of the study of the role of deliberate practice in the acquisition of expert performance. Professor Erickson in there, they found that the people, the subjects that they were interviewing, that they were watching and monitoring, had 3.5 to 4 hours worth of deliberate practice. That's hardcore going after it practice. But also, on the other side, there were 10 things that contributed to that, music-related activities, so we're talking about transcribing, all those things. But the other thing that was not music-related, that they did just as much of every day, was recreational activities. 3.5 to 4 hours of deliberate practice, and then 3.5 to 4 hours of recreational activities. And on the weekend, it actually exceeded how much they practiced. The other thing was sleep. Wow, and I'll talk about that in a second. Sleep was huge. It was almost 3 times. They were getting over 8 hours of sleep a night. So I started looking at that going, man, that makes sense. For instance, I was in here recording earlier and I'm, you know, trying to get this course out and get all my thoughts together. And I started about 8:45. It was a little after 10:05, something like that. I'd been going for, you know, 70, 80 minutes. And I said, you know what? I got to get out. So I went out. It's a nice sunny day, a little chilly, about 40 degrees. I walked to the coffee shop by my house and walked back. It took about 20 minutes. Wasn't really about the coffee. I don't even drink that much coffee these days. It was about the walk. I listened to Antonio Sanchez. And when I got back, man, I was ready. I was ready to go because teaching is stressful to me. Teaching, I have to be in the zone to do that. Okay? And so whenever I'm in that zone, I get tired. It's just like practicing. I can only focus for so long before I'm like, okay, I got to have a break. All right? And then so what I do is I deliberately put recreational activities. Now, what does this do for the symbiotic relationship between your life and practice? This is awesome because it takes away all the stress you have that on a weekend you're enjoying yourself instead of stuck in a practice room. Should you practice? Yes, it showed that those professionals still maintain 3.5 to 4 hours of practice during the day on weekends. But the recreational activity was way more than that. So it shows that yes, practice was important, but the way they were recovering was by doing those activities. I talked about it earlier. Deliberate practice is not driven by the number of available hours. Deliberate practice is driven by how long it takes you to recover from your last session. And if you're not recovered, you're going to go in there, you're going to start practicing bad, you're going to go through the motions, and then you're going to burn out. All right? I want to read you something. I marked the place. So let me find it. This is from the role of deliberate practice in the acquisition of expert performance. Such a long name. What we have here is, and I'll read it real quick and you can just kind of do what you want with it. It says, the best data on sustained intellectual activity comes from financially independent authors. While completing a novel, famous authors tend to write only 4 hours during the morning, leaving the rest of the day for rest and recuperation. Hence, successful authors who can control their work habits and are motivated to optimize their productivity limit their most important intellectual activity to a fixed daily amount when working on projects requiring long periods of time to complete. Okay, so they're limiting their number of deliberate hours of practice. When individuals start with deliberate practice in a domain, the initial duration of weekly practice is limited. So whenever you first start trying to practice deliberately, you have to do it at a reduced rate. It says, given the most future international level performers started at early ages, these brief durations are consistent with the short duration. So 10 to 20 minutes per session of long-term training programs with children. Consistent with the idea of slow adaptation to the demands of extended practice, individuals beginning to practice are encouraged to adopt a regular weekly schedule with practice periods of relatively fixed duration. After extended time with an acceptable practice level, individuals adapt their bodies and lives and can slowly, gradually increase that level. Too rapid increases in the intensity of practice lead to overuse and overtraining. All right. It says Bailey and Martin reported instances of successful 9 to 11 year old children increasing their training to very high levels only to experience motivational burnout and quit the domain altogether. In summary, disregard of the effort constraint on deliberate practice. So disregarding that it takes a lot of effort to practice in the way that I'm trying to teach you to practice, disregarding that leads to injury and even failure. In the short term, optimal deliberate practice maintains equilibrium, so it maintains a balance between effort and recovery. In the long term, it negotiates the effort constraint by slow, regular increases in amounts of practice that allow for adaptation to increased demands. Now, I know that was kind of a long read. What they're saying is, you need to relax. get your practice in, and then go recuperate. We recuperate in really two main ways. We recuperate with leisurely activities, things done for fun, and then we also recuperate with sleep. Sleep was voted as the second most, the second best thing you can do for your practice time. Number one was deliberately practicing. Number two was sleep. It's right up there in the top three. So my first tip is you should have as much leisure activity during the day as you do practice time. Deliberate practice time. My second tip for you is to know when you're out of your space, know when you've reached your limit, and quit practicing. So we just read, going over your limit, so being able to stay in the zone, we know it's mentally stressful. Once you've reached that limit, you need to quit, because at that point, you're going into just going through the motions. You're going into repetitive, mindless practicing. And we've said before, I've said it several times, that leads to burnout. Because all we're doing now, we're just putting in the hours. Now we're just clocking in over at McDonald's. Nothing wrong with working at McDonald's, but now we're just clocking into a job that is not our destination for the rest of our life. We're just popping the card in there, clocking in, clocking out. We have to avoid doing that, because doing that creates mundane activities. It creates boredom. If you want to keep things interesting, be focused that whole time. So once you've reached that limit, understand, okay, now it's time for me to quit, go do some other activities, and then come back. The next thing, so the third thing that I would suggest for you to do is, and it's kind of a twofold, take regular breaks and get enough sleep. So whenever we're practicing, and I'll go back to my instance earlier, I really can't go longer than 60 to 80 minutes. And if you look if you look at professionals, and then you also look at the studies that have been done on them, they usually have their practice sessions divided up into that, and then they take some kind of rest, whether it be 10 or 20 minutes, or even sometimes 3 hours. They'll do a split session. They take some kind of rest, and that enables them to come back with renewed strength. Okay? That's really important to understand. A lot of times I suggest to students that they go with the 50-10 rule. What is the 50-10 rule? For every 50 minutes of practice you put in, put 10 minutes of a break. You can make that break anything you want, and I have suggestions later on for how you can schedule your breaks and what you can do. I don't get on social media. I don't get on email. I don't call people. I typically try to do some stretching. I go outside for a short walk. Maybe, you know, if I'm practicing at home, maybe there's some. I used to, when I was in college, my wife worked full-time. She stays home with the kids now, which is like more than a full-time job. She used to work full-time. Now she just works all the time. I was there, and so I was in college, and I felt bad because I was bringing an income, but not as much as she was. And so my duties was like the house too. So when I practiced at home, I would do chores, you know, felt like I was a kid. I would do chores. So I would have, you know, 4 rooms that needed to be vacuumed. And if I took 4 different breaks, I would get 2 rooms done each time. Maybe I'd load the dishwasher, clean out the kitchen, something that's really mindless that I don't really have to think about. So in other words, it's not like, oh, I'm concentrating now on writing this email, or I'm getting distracted. I'm simply focused on vacuuming the floor. Takes zero thought, like, oh, I missed a spot. That's the most thought it takes. So mundane activities like stretching, some breathing exercises, walking outside, playing with your kids, playing with the dog, doing mundane house chores. Those kind of things allow you to recuperate and come back. I usually listen to music while I'm doing it. The next thing that's kind of tagged onto that is getting enough sleep, and I'll talk about this later, but tons of studies have been done that link sleep to efficiency and mental focus, and so you really need to be getting sleep done. All the studies that have been done on professionals as well as on those that are coming up to be professionals, they get over 8 hours of sleep a night, and they usually include a nap during the day. Some type of a nap. And if you go and read the book Daily Rituals, look at how much walking those people do and how many naps they take. They really value their sleep time. It lets them be clear. I used to not value sleep. I used to, you know, sleep's a waste of time. 4 hours and I'm good. Man, now that I get enough sleep, if I get a day where I don't get enough sleep, I realize how much of a fog I was walking around in for years. And the horrible thing was I didn't have any focus. I was always sleepy. I was intaking too much coffee, and then I was just cramming myself in the practice room for 8 and 10 hour days, not getting near what I could have gotten done. Okay, I'm all for practicing, but not past the limit that we can focus. You may be able to focus for 5 hours a day. Man, that's awesome. There was a time where I really could do that. If you can focus for 5 hours a day, or you get to 4 hours and you're like, man, I'm still in this. Keep going. Practice as much as you can. I will always tell you that. But know your limit, because at that point, you're burning into reserves. Make sure you get enough sleep. If you feel like you need a nap, you may need a nap, all right? I sound like a parent, but you may need a nap, okay? Learn to listen to your cues. So I'm going to just recap. The three tips that took way too long to explain were, number one, we need to make sure we have as much leisure activity during our day as we do deliberate practice activity. If you don't, then you are going against the norm of what all the professionals that have been studied did. You're actually going into, they study the professionals and the semi-professionals. The semi-professionals, their leisure time was kind of out of whack. Okay? So you need to follow. This is what professionals do. They make sure they're having fun so that they can put more fuel in their tank so they can go back and be productive. Second thing is take regular breaks. You need to make sure that you're taking breaks. You need to make sure that you're refueling yourself. Okay? Don't run on empty. And the third thing is, I think I did these out of order, but the third thing is know when to quit. Know whenever you're not in the zone anymore, when taking those short breaks and putting the sticks down is not working. No, okay, I'm in the hard zone. My hands are on my ears. I can't absorb any more knowledge. I'm frustrated. I'm going to put this down, take a couple deep breaths, go out and have some fun. All right, take the stress off yourself. Know that professionals practice 3 to 4 hours a day. It's deliberate. It's crazy deliberate. So if you're not a professional and you're going 1 to 2 hours a day, awesome. You're going to get there.